Everyone wants to be shown respect. Most of us were taught as children to respect others, and respect is an important part of almost every belief system in the world. But how do you know if you truly respect others? How can you be sure you are expressing that respect sufficiently through your words and actions? As Christians, we respect our fellow man for one simple, undeniable reason. God is love. God loves each and every person just as He loves you and me. It is our Christian duty to show that unconditional love and acceptance to everyone we come in contact with. We want to have success with people, but how can we achieve that if we don't respect them? Even if you firmly believe in the principle of respect, the simple fact is that the application is often lacking in our day-to-day encounters. What we need to think about is how respect, or the lack of it, impacts our everyday lives, our subconscious and deliberate thoughts, and our actions towards others. Is the respect we have for others manifested in the way we live and interact with others? Or is it simply one of those ideals which we know is right and good, but which we put little emphasis on actually practicing? If respect is a part of us, it will show in our actions and in our conversations. Obviously, having respect for others is crucial to our success as missionaries and witnesses. Those we minister to must feel comfortable with us before they will be willing to open their hearts and lives to us and to our message. The people we interact with and witness to need to feel accepted. They need to feel safe with us. They need to know that we love and respect them, and that we won't criticize them, belittle them or their culture or beliefs, mock them behind their backs, or gossip about them. Respect is very much a part of love. Love that is manifested in understanding, acceptance, tolerance, and open-mindedness.
A fundamental concept is to realize that deep inside, everyone has the same needs. From pretty young shop girls and waitresses and secretaries, to elderly widows and rich old dowagers, from handsome young clerks, bookkeepers, technicians, white-collar workers, and engineers, to wealthy businessmen, retired widowers, single shopkeepers, and even the bachelor farmers. They're all the same. They're all longing for love of all kinds, but especially for a love they have never known before. True love, sincere love, genuine love, the truly great love of their life, the love of all loves, the lover of all lovers, who alone can satisfy that deepest yearning of every human soul for total love and complete understanding. He's the power and life of the universe that some people call God, but that the Bible itself calls love, for God is love. He's pictured in His Son, Christ Jesus, a man who loved everybody, even the poorest and the worst of all. He is the lover of all lovers, who came for love and lived in love and died for love, that we might live and love forever. One definition of the word respect is an attitude of deference, admiration, or esteem. Polite or kind regard, consideration for people's feelings, to show consideration for, to treat courteously or kindly. That reminds me of a Bible verse which instructs, "Let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than themselves." Respect goes right along with humility, because you can't esteem others as they should be esteemed if your pride and self-importance is getting in the way. The angle we'll explore today is not whether we feel humility deep within us, but rather how our humility and perception of ourselves affects how we view others, and how that view is manifested in our speech and actions. Ask yourself these questions. What do I feel for ethnic groups, cultures, or nationalities that are different than mine? Especially consider your reactions or attitudes if those individuals display habits, customs, or traits you happen to dislike or find distasteful. Am I tolerant or am I judgmental toward those who choose lifestyles that are different than mine? Do I ever feel that I'm better, even just a little bit better than those who subscribe to a different church, religion, or belief system than me? Have I allowed bigotry, prejudice, or intolerance to inadvertently become part of my thoughts or my speech, even through casual humor? Do I make false assumptions or develop unfounded preconceived ideas about people based on their race, religion, culture, background, education, physical appearance, or social standing? Certainly, we have all been guilty of one or more of these attitudes. I know I have. But I'm grateful to have had some tough but meaningful experiences over the years that have helped to bring my vanity down a few notches and unravel my preconceived ideas. Possibly the same has happened to you. It's worth reflecting on. For each of us, the specific ways in which we might lack respect for others is different. It could show itself in reference to persons, groups, religions, cultures, or lifestyle choices which are different than our own, that for some reason or another we have come to strong personal conclusions about, often without truly knowing the people or situation firsthand. Maybe it's a mindset handed down to us from a sector of our society or from our upbringing. Maybe it's an opinion of a role model or close friend that we've adopted without having been open to another perspective. Or maybe we have had experiences that have tainted our point of view, so we feel justified in having taken the unconscious action of lumping all of a certain sector of society together and judging all of them according to that negative memory. What a wonderful world it would be if we were all colorblind and race unconscious, where the only thing we saw when we looked on a person of another background was love. Even when fear, prejudice, and hatred have been ingrained for years, the wonderful love of God can wash it all away. Once you personally know that God loves and forgives you, it becomes much easier to love and forgive others. You can then get rid of all bitterness, rage, and anger, along with every form of malice, and be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other, just as in Christ God forgave you. Our tolerance of others, which is another way of showing respect and being humble, is often tested when people treat us with a lack of respect. Or perhaps we've felt mistreated, put down, or hurt by someone, and thus feel tempted to act in a less than respectful, dignified, or loving way toward them. This happens to everyone from time to time, no matter what your background, heritage, or career. But every one of us has the freedom to choose how we'll respond to the way people treat us, even if their treatment of us doesn't seem fair or right. Here's a moving account that provides some food for thought.
Booker T. Washington struggled against deep-seated white prejudice to establish his Tuskegee Institute in Alabama. One day, as he passed the mansion of a wealthy woman to whom he was just another black, he heard her call out, "Come here, boy, I need some wood chopped." Without a word, Washington peeled off his jacket, picked up the axe, and went to work, not only cutting a pile of wood, but carrying it into the house. He had scarcely left when a servant said, "That was Professor Washington, ma'am." Abashed, the woman went to the institute to apologize. Replied the educator, "There's no need for apology, ma'am. I'm delighted to do favors for my friends." The woman became one of Tuskegee's warmest and most generous supporters.
Consider these ground rules regarding respect. 1, it's vital. Regardless of where our assumptions originated, we need to recognize that failing to show respect to each and every human being will sabotage our personal happiness and success. It will distance us from potential friends and acquaintances, keep us from new positive learning experiences, and hinder our emotional, social, and spiritual growth. Whether you are hoping to launch a mission work on a foreign field, excel in a charitable work, or progress in your studies or business, you need the qualities of tolerance, generosity, acceptance, humility, and respect. 2, you can't fake respect. Be sincere. People can sense sincerity, or the lack of it. You can't get by with being shallow and two-faced in your interactions with others. If you try to be nice on the outside, while thinking negative, critical thoughts about someone on the inside, you will come across as a phony. 3, you can change. Although a lack of respect for others is a common character flaw, it can be overcome. You will be well on your way to improving in this area when you recognize that condescending, disrespectful attitudes are not like Jesus and will not help you to grow into the accepting, caring soul you were created to be. You were put on this earth to love, and every step of progress you make in this area is a step towards greater happiness and success in your life. How do we recognize and discard wrong attitudes that hinder our free expression of respect to all people God has created? Here are 6 steps to consider. Step 1. Realize that we could be wrong about some of our attitudes and the ways we think, feel, speak, or act. Step 2. Reflect on our lives and pinpoint the precise gaps in how we demonstrate our respect toward others. Step 3. Ask the Lord to help us make the changes in our personality that will help us express greater respect for those we come in contact with. Reflect on the amazing fact that He loves every single person completely, perfectly, and unconditionally, no less than He loves us. Step 4. Watch movies or documentaries that broaden your mind and give you understanding and empathy, and in turn respect, for other peoples, nations, religions, cultures, and creeds. Step 5. Ask questions of an elderly acquaintance or family member and listen and learn. Step 6. Listen carefully to people who are different than you. Don't contradict or correct where you think they're off. Shut down your verbal patterns for this one experiment. Just listen, listen, and listen some more. Once we realize how wrong we have been, once we make the effort to get to know others by finding out their heartaches, challenges, troubles, and joys, and empathizing with them, by learning what makes them tick and appreciating them, we'll discover a beautiful place, a higher ground where we will never again be willing to stoop to generalities, negative stereotypes, or insulting remarks. Empathy involves understanding another's heart, mind, and spirit, including their motives, backgrounds, and feelings. The more empathy we have for others, the more we come to appreciate and reverence who they are.
The most enduring example of respect is that of Jesus Christ. The actions He took during His stay on earth horrified many of the religious leaders of His day because of His total disregard for the prejudice that was so steeped in the society and religion of that time. His accusers condemned Him as a gluttonous man, a winebibber, a friend of publicans and sinners. Think about the parable of the Good Samaritan, the salvation of the publicans, calling Matthew the tax collector to be His disciple, and befriending the prostitute, Mary Magdalene. Under all circumstances, Jesus granted total love and equal respect to all, right up until His death beside a murderer. Jesus showed the same amount of respect and the same offer of salvation to a despised murderer as He did to a holy ruler of the Jewish people. As familiar as these Bible stories are, think about the incredible amount of character that took. When Jesus ministered to the Samaritan woman at the well, it was no ordinary occurrence. The nation that Jesus was born into deemed themselves so far above the Samaritans that they had to undergo an extended cleansing period if they chanced contact with a Samaritan, or if they went under the roof of a Samaritan's house, let alone if they drank water from the defiled water jug of one of them. As unbelievable as this seems to us now, that was reality at the time. But in order to show God's love and respect to each human being, Jesus was willing to break the accepted codes of conduct. That's how much it meant to Him to show each one how much they were valued in God's eyes. Suffice it to say, there was some serious religious tension between these two cultures. Clearly, the Judeans overall despised the Samaritans, and likely the feeling was mutual. With that in mind, you can see what a big deal it was for Jesus to do what He did in bringing God's message of love and truth to Samaria. First, He chose to go to Samaria with His followers and to sit on the well outside the city to rest while His disciples went to look for food. When a woman came to the well to draw water, He then asked her for a drink. The woman was shocked and asked, "How is it that thou, being a Jew, ask for a drink of me, which am a woman of Samaria? For the Jews have no dealings with the Samaritans." Jesus took that opening to launch into a powerful witness about His mission on earth, and to explain to her the ways of heaven, which have no relation to the laws of man, telling her that it did not matter where she chose to worship, so long as she was worshiping the Father in spirit and in truth. When the disciples returned, it says that they marveled that He talked with the woman, yet no man said, "What do you seek?" or "Why do you talk with her?" Obviously, they were wondering what was going on, but they sensed that something important was happening. And I imagine that each of the disciples came away from that day with a great life lesson after witnessing Jesus' utter love and respect for someone whom they had been trained to treat unequally. When I was studying, there was this guy in my class who I'll call Monty. I know it's bad, but I just couldn't stand him. He was a couple years older than me, yet couldn't keep up with the class academically, or in any other way, as far as I was concerned. The thing was, we all knew he was smart. He just wasn't motivated. In my opinion, that was a poor excuse for the bad choices he seemed to consistently make. He lacked personal hygiene, was overbearing in sports, was dishonest, to name just a few of the issues I had with him. It got to the point where I could hardly be in the same room, and that was a problem because we were in the same class. What to do? By the time I had exhausted my very small supply of patience, tolerance, and understanding, I knew I had to go to God for some answers. He nudged me to be more caring and loving than before. And here I was the one who hadn't done a thing wrong. God and I finally agreed that I would try. And the idea was to find some common ground. But what did I have in common with this weird, bothersome individual? Well, as it turned out, we did have common ground. And what I learned from this experience stuck with me to this day. There is always something I can agree on with any individual on this earth. And if something about them is similar to me, then I can understand that part of them, which gives me a respect for them. What was my common ground with Monty? It turned out he liked to cook, as I do. So I invited him to cook a meal with me for a group of my friends. Like me, he also liked to read, and we had read some of the same fantasy novels. How unexpected! Somehow, I started to see the good in him. I realized he wasn't really the person I had thought he was. Monty and I never became close friends, but he did seem to change after that day. Or wait, maybe it was I who had changed. I was able to interact with him just fine from then on. Somehow, he didn't get on my nerves anymore, and I would even surprise myself by sticking up for him around my friends. More importantly than all that, though, I gained a needed life lesson which has never left me.
A couple excellent key promises on the subject of respect are: the keys will cause you to see another through my eyes, beyond their imperfections, and to love them with my love. And when you claim the keys of understanding, I will clear your mind and give you insight into the hearts of others. Now, we've talked about appreciating others, and so far you might have applied these thoughts to people you don't know very well, or people you're ministering to, or to those in the foreign country you reside in. But the same principles of success need to be applied to everyone, not just acquaintances and business associates and those you're ministering to, but also those you're closest and most familiar with, your family, friends, siblings, spouse, etc. Like the expression, love begins at home, that's often where respect begins too. And if we don't have respect for those we love, know well, and work closely with, then how can we have respect for those we hardly know? It's not possible to literally walk a mile in the shoes of someone who is different than you. You can't snap your fingers and try out being older, living with physical or mental ailments, being lighter or heavier, changing your looks, speaking a different language, having a different skin, hair, or eye color, or living in a different country or social status than you do. But to get as close as you can, try this. Put yourself in surroundings that are normally outside of your comfort zone, even for a short time, by traveling abroad, taking on a part-time job, or volunteering. Then observe, listen, and apply. Imagine yourself in the skin of that other person you used to judge, and think about what you'd be like in their situation. You might learn a lot by walking a mile in their shoes. You might find that you have more in common than you expected. Here's a poem that illustrates this simple yet important life principle. If I knew you and you knew me, if both of us could clearly see, and with an inner sight divine, the meaning of your heart and mine, I'm sure that we would differ less and clasp our hands in friendliness. Our thoughts would pleasantly agree if I knew you and you knew me. If I knew you and you knew me, as each one knows his own self, we could look each other in the face and see therein a truer grace. Life has so many hidden woes, so many thorns for every rose. The why of things our hearts would see if I knew you and you knew me. To close, I'd like to share with you a beautiful prophecy where God's love is depicted in a very up-close and personal manner. This shows God's heart for each person he has created and teaches us what attitude we should have toward mankind, not only those we know well, but all those whom we hope to reach with his message of salvation.
I am the good gardener, the faithful gardener, and I have planted a beautiful, wide, glorious garden. In my garden, each flower is different and unique, beautiful to mine eyes, and special. Each flower is a unique color and a unique size, and serves its own purpose, and has its own place in the garden and its own place in the heart of the gardener. I do not look upon you as the masses or the group, but I look upon you as a special, unique individual, my son or my daughter. And I loved each one of you so much that I gave my son, Jesus, for you, just you. To paint a picture of this love, imagine that there is a scale before you. It is a balance, and I took my own son, the one who is dearest to me, my one and only son, and I laid him on one side of the scale. It tipped so far to that side. Then I took you, with all your weaknesses and your shortcomings and your idiosyncrasies and all the things about yourself that bother you so much and that you think make you of so little value and that make you so hard to love and not worthy of my love. I put you, just you, on the other side of the scale, and the scale was perfectly balanced. I saw that it was a good trade. I put my son on one side, and I put you, just you, on the other side. I saw that it was worth it to trade the life of my son for you, that I might have you forever. This is how great my love is for you.
If God can love each of us as if there were only one of us, then we who have his son Jesus in our hearts can tap into that same source of supernatural, unconditional love and love one another with his love.
We each need to feel respected, valued, and like we have something important to offer our community and those we love. The good news is that we have the greatest treasure in the world to offer others, the love and truth of God. God is love, and he loves you as if you were the only person in the whole world. He also loves every other person as if he or she were the only person in the world. His love for others is just as strong as his love for you. He created each person with unique traits, talents, and characteristics. And it's up to us to appreciate the good in different cultures, nationalities, and religions. We need to have the same genuine concern and respect for others that Jesus had with the Samaritan woman at the well. He loved her without prejudice or preconceived ideas. This kind of respect for others is crucial to our success in fulfilling the mission. Are you strong enough to choose humility? Are you wise enough to know that you don't know everything? And intuitive enough to value the wisdom and experience of others? Are you big enough to seek out what others bring to the table and to build on their strengths? Celebrate people's differences. Look for the beauties instead of the flaws. Draw on the strengths of others and the qualities they have that you don't. Listen, empathize, understand, and care. Learn to love and appreciate individuals for their worth, and above all, for their value to the one who created and loves each of us equally.